And the worst question you can ever ask in a marriage is, how can I have a better marriage? I think the better question is, what can I do to be a better husband, to be a better wife?
Dr. Greg Smalley reflecting about intimacy in marriage, and he and his wife Erin join us today on Focus on the Family. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
Today we want to help couples understand the depth of intimacy in marriage, and it's more than just the physical component. And so quickly we tend to lean in that direction, but there are so many components that add to intimacy, like emotional intimacy, relational and spiritual intimacy. All those things actually contribute to the full story. Greg and Erin Smalley are experts on this topic. They travel all over the country speaking at marriage retreats and conferences. In fact, for Focus on the Family, they'll be doing about 15 marriage conferences in the coming year. Here at Focus, we see marriage as one of the pillars of the family, if not the pillar. And that's one reason we champion it the way we do. It can be tough. The culture isn't totally with us any longer. But it is time for us to redouble our efforts to make sure our marriages are in a good place. They're a witness to the world, folks. And if you're struggling, Focus on the Family is here for you.
And we always enjoy having Greg and Erin in the studio. As you said, Jim, they're on staff here. And so we get the chance to have them with us with great frequency. And they head up the marriage effort here at Focus and do such a great work. I'm really glad to have them behind that.
Now, how many of us are coming to you, Greg and Erin, saying, hey, could you help me with this little problem? Is a hallway chat here at Focus? Does it happen?
That's why we can't get any other work done, because we are helping with enthusiasm our team.
That's good. Yeah.
I sat in the chapelteria yesterday and just had a line, you know, set up.
Reception line.
Not like Lucy, 5 cents advice here.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
The old Peanuts character.
Actually, they only go to Erin. Come think of it.
No,
that's why you and I have lunch, Greg.
Well, that's what it is.
You know what?
Yeah.
Erin is really the nicer of the two of you, I got to tell you.
I'm just the trophy husband. I'm just here to look good.
Well, listen, it is great to have you back here at the microphones. I know you're walking in the door each and every day, and we so appreciate it, your dedication to marriage. Greg, let me ask you that. Some Christians, married Christians, are saying, this is such a struggle. I just feel like giving up. Just hit us right now with that one. Why should we not give up as Christians in our marriages?
Because with God, through God, not only are all things possible, but there's always hope. I mean, what I love is that he is always rooting for our marriage. It was his idea. He has given that to us as a gift. Yeah. So he's always there. And Erin and I have been through hard seasons. We've been through dark times. There's been moments that I didn't know how it was going to work out, if we could pull this off, stay married, and yet God was always there. Just keep going. You can do this. Providing, bringing people, bringing mentors, bringing shows like Focus on the Family, just to help us stay strong.
Well, I think that's what's great about how you approach it. You're real, you're authentic, and you draw on those feelings and those difficulties that you've had. So it's not like you've lived a pristine life, even though many people would think, you know, you're the son of Gary Smalley.
And, you know, so that's what I tell Erin.
How could you not have caught this? But, you know, you even talk about how your dad and your mom didn't always get along.
Yeah.
I can remember one time Jean said to me, this was a few years ago, thankfully. She said, I love you. I just don't like you right now. And that's like, ouch, why would you not like me?
it seems impossible. I know.
Let
I
me
know
ask Erin, why would somebody say that? Have you ever said that to Greg?
Never. Never. But I was nodding my head when you said it. Yeah. So
resonate.
Yes. And I mean, there's days that you're not going to like each other. And, you know, I just think it's so important to surround yourself with community that's going to help you empathize and see the other person's point of view and validate you and just walk with you and push you, propel you forward in your marriage and not give you the advice to walk away.
Yeah. And that's what we want to talk about today, is how do we develop this? You've written a great book, and we've touched on it a couple times on the broadcast, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage. And first of all, your sense of humor is terrific. Although you need to channel it. I could tell you guys could tear each other apart with it too. Mm. But one of the funniest stories I love about you two is when you're first married, and Greg, you almost took your wife out with a bag of laundry. Just refresh my memory on how that story went, because it is so funny. Every guy would love to try this, but we would say, don't do this at home.
Yeah, you're just trying to get me in trouble.
I'm going right for it. I'm watching Aaron's face sink.
Hurts
what
me.
What happened?
I think we had woken up.
We woke up just irritated with each other. Annoyed.
Married about a year or two?
Yeah, no, 6 months.
Oh, six months.
Six months. This was early on. And I had to go to work, and we were just fighting back and forth, bickering like we often did that first year. And I finally set a limit with Greg and said, okay, no more talking. Stop. No more. This isn't going anywhere. I don't know what the problem is, but I'm going to go to work. I'll be back, and we'll figure this out when I get home. So I took one step outside the door, and I popped my head back in and made one more smart comment. You know, I liked the last word, and off I went.
And where did you live? Describe the location.
Denver Seminary.
The
top floor, fourth floor. So I left and I went down, you know, four flights of stairs and was gone.
Yeah, so there I am all by myself. She gets the last word in. I had more that I wanted to share, but she's gone. So I had promised that I'd get our laundry together, take it down to the first floor to the laundry room. And I'm getting it all ready, and I kind of drag this bag, full bag of laundry, out onto the little balcony, and I was just going to drop it so I could go down first floor, pull it right in. Simple.
A matter of convenience.
Thank you. See, I thought it was a great idea. So as I get the laundry bag out there, I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's stuffed completely full. I'm about to let go when I notice Aaron is walking on the first floor right towards me. I mean, it's been about 10 minutes, but there she is. So I thought it would be funny if while she walked by, what if I accidentally dropped the laundry bag right next to her, and then she'd look up and I would, you know, ha, last word that. So I'd get the last word.
But the key is you were trying to go right next to her.
Yes.
And how'd that go?
Well, I did let loose of the laundry bag. It actually hit her. Hit her right on the side, like clipped on the side, but it launched her. She goes flying. Keys go flying. Her purse goes flying. She lands on her back looking up at me as I'm looking over thinking, oh, man.
That's not good.
I'm in trouble. Well, she shoots up, races up the stairs. She's coming right at me.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going to throw me off the balcony. And so I did what any real man would do. I ran back into the apartment and locked the door.
You didn't run to her arms and say, I'm so sorry. I meant to hit close to you, but not on you.
She would have thrown me over. You don't run to your spouse in those moments. You run away.
Okay, so there you have it. I would say most intimacy, no matter what kind, emotional, spiritual, physical, was pretty much cut at that moment.
Yes.
So how do you begin to repair that? How do you come back around and start to say, okay, I want to connect with you?
You know, actually, there's a great verse in Hosea 2:14 to where God is trying to win back his bride, the children of Israel. And he says, therefore, I will allure her. I will speak tenderly to her. And what I love about that verse is he gives a great way to begin to really reconnect and to cultivate that intimacy. The word allure, I mean, think of like if you're fishing, you're throwing a lure. You're trying to capture someone's attention. So at that moment, and really that season in our marriage, mm-hmm. I mean, Aaron was hurt, frustrated, disconnected, probably was turning away from me symbolically. And so to allure her means to capture her attention. Like, how do I get someone who's mad at me to turn back towards me? And God gives such an amazing answer when he says, I will speak tenderly to her.
Well, and I'm sure, Aaron, at that point, you didn't have the perspective as a couple to really understand that. This is now years of development where you guys had to go through some hard stuff. And, you know, what would you say to that younger couple that you didn't have in the moment? How could they have that kind of disagreement or something else and begin to mend that fence tonight? How would you have done it differently in the first 6 months of your marriage if you had the knowledge you have today?
You know, back then, I mean, I can't imagine anyone else going through that scenario. And if you have gone through that, I am so sorry. However, you know, I just encourage you to hang in there. Again, surround yourself with good community and seek the Lord with, you know, all your heart to just really ask him what he would have you to do. you know, really the thing that we didn't understand back then is the impact that this stuff was having on our hearts. It was closing our hearts down, hardening our hearts toward each other. And then that impacts your relationship because you can't get away from it. Everything they do, everything they say, you're going to see it through a negative lens because of a closed heart. So be aware of where your heart's at and turn toward the Lord.
I like that point you're making to hang in there because I think today too many young couples particularly, but some older couples, decide just to give it up rather than to learn in the process how to treat each other better and then apply that in the years ahead and in the moment they're in. Instead, we say, you know what? It's not working. Let's just give up. And that's not the right answer.
Well, and I'm still thinking about the laundry incident here.
Thank you, John.
That kind of got you there.
Well, there are moments where you really don't like each other. How in the world do you take a step toward intimacy when everything in you is saying, I just couldn't care less?
Well, thankfully for Greg, I was a nurse, and so I had a 12-hour shift to go and work. So it gave us a little time to
feel
get
sorry
some,
for your patients.
To get, yeah, no kidding. You know, to get some perspective.
I'll get blood drawn from you.
What happened at home, man? You're being so mean.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I think your perspective has to change. It's in those moments that I'm shut down, mad at her. Who am I thinking about?
You.
Her. Well, yeah, I'm thinking how hurt I am, but I'm really very aware of what she could do differently.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm running through a list. If she did this different, this different. And the worst question you can ever ask in a relationship, in a marriage, is how can I have a better marriage?
Because it'll always focus on the other person.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It takes two people to have a great marriage. I think the better question is, what can I do to be a better husband, to be a better wife? And in those moments, when we're hurting, if I can shift it to what can I do? What can I choose to do? I go back to that Hosea verse. God shows us that he pursues his wife, the children of Israel. He didn't wait. He was hurt. He was justified based on their infidelity towards him. But what does he do? He humbles himself. He pursues her, and he starts by being tender. There's a formula right there.
Greg, another funny component here is you described Aaron as your tin cow wife.
Lord, here we go. So,
you guys are working me over.
Your sense of humor. Your sense of humor is quite unique. How Aaron might be described as a tin cow wife.
Okay. There's context there.
Go ahead. Well, yes. I need to hear it because I don't know what it is.
There is context, and crazy enough, this happened when we were dating, and so I don't know how he quite allured me in and drew me in, but I can remember it clear as day. We were sitting out by my parents' pool. We were raised in Phoenix, Arizona. So sitting out by the pool one night, and I just wasn't sure where the relationship was going. And so as I am, you know, a little bit more on the assertive side, I asked him, I'm like, where is this going? And he proceeded by telling me, I know exactly how I feel about you. I see you as a 10 cow wife. And I literally sat there going, are you kidding me?
No, you weren't enamored by that?
No, not whatsoever.
Well, in defense of myself, I had literally just read a story of this fictional story about a guy who lived in this island somewhere in the Pacific to where the custom was that to get the girl that you had to give the dad so many cows. And so like a one cow would buy, you know, a very plain average on up to like a five cow is like the best woman in the island.
So five cows was top notch.
Oh, he was top notch.
So was doubling down there.
So
he gives 8 cows for this very plain woman. So everybody's laughing, thinking he's been taken by the father-in-law. His explanation, though, it moved me. He's like, imagine when the women talk about how many cows were given for them. He goes, I didn't want my wife to say, well, you know, he only paid one cow. He goes, I wanted her to know that she was the most valuable woman on the island. So he goes, I paid 8 cows. And I loved that. And so I was trying to convey, you are so valuable to me that I would pay 10 cows for your hand in marriage. I value that much. I love you that much.
Now, I know you're the counselor, but can I counsel you for a minute? Did you share the story with Erin before you told her she was a 10-cow wife?
I didn't.
No.
Just a bit of advice. Because it's a great story.
It could have been better had I done that first, but it got her attention, though. And I'm telling you, it was, and I'm not making this up, it was 2 weeks after that that I proposed to her.
So you saw through that little problem.
I gave him the benefit of the doubt, you know, and believed that truly the story was about the 10-cow wife, not
it was
that
all about
I
value.
Was a cow.
I mean, that was the point. I mean, it was how much I valued her.
So if Jean doesn't hear this, Jim, you can go home tonight and you could try to tell her that story.
I think I'll start the other direction. Yeah, I heard this great story.
I've got better stories.
You're a 15-cow wife.
That's one of several truths that you mentioned in your book, Crazy Little Thing Called Marriage, and that is the truth of honoring each other. Another one I wanted to touch on was that true love serves. This can be a delicate one because you got to negotiate that a bit, don't you?
Totally.
What does it look like in a healthy marriage to serve one another?
You know, there's such a concept that can change around this area because really when you talk about serving each other, it's absolutely relevant that you have that attitude in your marriage, especially when it comes around to household chores and household duties and, you know, just having the attitude and introducing the attitude that we are a team, that we're on each other's side, that we're in this marriage together. And I know Greg regularly does chores around the house, and we kind of have our own
I'm a good boy.
Things that we do.
Good, John and I are looking down right now.
Yeah, they're not giving me eye contact. I will take care of them. Gene, I've got it. Recently, Greg has been on this kick of cleaning things out. Like, I mean, literally, I'll come home, and the laundry room is completely gutted, and it's pristine. But this last time, I went to mop the floor, and I'm like, hey, babe, where's my new mop? And he said, oh, I took that to Goodwill. It was this cheap mop. And I was like, no, that I bought that just recently. It's like a very expensive mop. So I went to Goodwill and I hunted for it. It wasn't there. It was gone. Someone got a really great mop.
It looked like a complete piece of junk. It looked ratty, old.
Okay, so you don't
no
know
it was like a $100 mop. Yeah.
So you forgive him and say, oh, he's trying to serve.
He's trying to serve. So, but he did say I was where I could get another one of those mops recently. And so I texted him, I go, are you going to buy me a new mop? He said, yes. So that was the right answer. So as you
now, a lot
serve
of women
each
just
other.
Winced. Tell him to do his own mopping. Right? I'm serious.
Yeah, get down on your hands and knees. Scrub that floor.
Yeah,
no.
I will. If that's what you wanted, I would do that. For me, I love how often in the Bible God pairs the idea of love with sacrifice, with serving. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. No greater love than this, than when a man lays down his life for his friends. Jesus says that this is then how we know what love is, that Christ came to die for, so we ought to lay down our life for others. That has just radically transformed my idea of loving her. Is really about the evidence will be my ability to serve, to sacrifice, to give up something that I value, my time, my resources. When we're faced with figuring out who's going to do what or making decisions, what if we both started from a standpoint of how could I outserve you? How could I sacrifice for you? I mean, imagine two servants trying to outserve one another first and foremost. I mean, that's going to solve every argument we get into or every battle over who does what. But I tell you, it has radically transformed just how I approach making decisions with her. Is this something that I could sacrifice for her?
Yeah.
That's a great way to start.
I think there's a lot of friction around that issue of serving each other.
Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to do. And I think in part because we have to give of ourselves. And that's what I think at the core is the issue of marriage. That's why God did it the way he did it.
Yeah.
So we could become more like him. How is Christ? He's selfless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really
he's
hard
a
sacrificer. For us, you know, human beings to do that. Let me go back for a moment, though, to true love seeks God. Now, again, these are the secrets of intimacy, and this is listed as number two. One of the things sometimes for me, I can, especially during football season, you ready for this confession? You know, I get a little more lax about other spiritual intimacy things, like praying together and doing things together that lift up God in our home. And it may be a little bit of an exaggeration about football season, but I think a lot of times men are distracted. We got a lot going on at the office. We got all these things happening. And maybe, Aaron, you should address this as a wife. Where do men fail in that area of spiritual leadership, spiritual intimacy for a woman? Well, how could we do it better?
You know, so often I believe that men feel like they're not doing it good enough, that they're not showing up the way their wife wants them to. And as a wife, as a young wife, I really was discouraged with Greg and how I believed that he should be showing up. And the truth was he was doing a lot, but I was choosing not to see that. And so just to the, especially the young wives out there that, you know, encourage your spouse. You know, we're called to encourage one another daily. Mm. And so do that. Watch for what he is doing versus what he's not doing. Because as a young husband, Greg was growing and maturing and developing into a leader, a spiritual leader of our home. And it's taken some time. And he was doing things back then. And
I got a big smile. We're all about to laugh.
And any day now.
And we're still waiting. The egg's about to hatch.
Years later.
Yeah.
But no, we're all connecting with it because we're all guilty of it. We're not measuring up in so many ways.
He's learning and growing and developing. And 25 years later, I can say that he's doing a whole lot. And I don't know if I was choosing not to see it all along, if my vision has changed, but I also see a man who is leading our family very well.
And there was something in your book that reinforces that. I think you wrote about be realistic, don't expect perfection. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good distinction because neither one of you is going to do everything just the way the other spouse wants it done, right?
Not at all. It comes down to being aware of what are my expectations of how we will have a spiritual relationship, because it may actually look very different, but it doesn't mean that it's still not a good spiritual relationship. I know for me, I feel the closest to God outdoors. There's something about being in the mountains. I love being in Colorado. Yeah. Can be on the stream, in the mountain. We hike a lot. And when I'm in those situations, I can't help but to talk about God. Just the other day, we went for a walk and through our neighborhood, found there was a new little road I hadn't seen before. And then there was a tiny little mountain with a little rock outcrop. And we climbed up just through our neighborhood, climbed up on this, had this amazing view. We just sat there and I took her hand and we started praying. We prayed probably 20 minutes. Well, that's not normal. I wish it was. But I think a part of what I've learned is one way to lead her is to let's be outdoors. Let's go for a hike. Let's go for a walk. I get inspired. I want to talk about spiritual things. And so I think a part of it is learning too what kind of where are places that your spouse really connects to God. For Erin, she grew up in a more traditional spiritual home to where when she's in church and taking communion, for example, man, she is just so connected to God. And for me, that's an opportunity to grab her hand and just participate with her in communion in a different way, because I know how important that is for her.
I don't know if this is too general of a question, but when that intimacy is broken, whether it's spiritual, emotional, or physical, what can a couple do, or what can one person in the marriage do to begin to rekindle that? And I know there's uniquenesses with each category, but is there kind of a general theme that I can apply tonight that might help mend some of that broken intimacy?
I think when people are frustrated with each other, when they're hurt, when it's a hard season, one of the first things that goes out of the relationship is a curiosity, is an interest to stay current in your spouse. And so if Erin and I aren't connecting, man, we all change. Different seasons. We just, our oldest daughter's getting married. Erin might need to be loved by me in a very different way. And so if I'm not feeling the connection, a very simple thing that I could do is to say, Erin, what is something that I could do that would speak love to you? What do you need from me right now in this season to connect? And usually she'll be able to go, oh, well, actually right now, man, just going on walks, you know, it actually just in this season, I just need to be out of the house, away from our other two kids, and let's just walk and talk. Mm-hmm. And so I have to have an attitude that one lifetime isn't long enough to know her. And therefore, I want to stay updated, current. Tell me what is one thing that I can be doing that would help you to feel loved. And that usually gets me something that I can do.
Well, what a great conversation with Greg and Erin Smalley as we explored the different facets of intimacy in marriage. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening. I'm John Fuller.
What Greg said about serving one another being God's idea of love can be a big challenge to couples, because perhaps the idea of serving others doesn't come easily to you or your spouse. Maybe you were brought up being served by others, and so serving is something that you'll need to practice in your marriage. Greg and Erin also speak of building one another up and helping each other feel valued. This is such a vital element in creating a marriage in which each of you receive the affirmation you need. I hope that you'll take these tips and put them into play in your marriage, and watch how God can transform your relationship. We're looking forward to a live stream event with Greg and Erin happening on Thursday this week, the 4th of June at 7 p.m. Please join us on Facebook Live, where Greg and Erin will present Reconnected, Moving from Roommates to Soulmates in Your Marriage. You know, over time, the busyness of life creeps in, and even the most deeply committed couples can feel like they're living parallel lives rather than enjoying life together. Greg and Erin will offer practical ways to rekindle the passionate, intimate, heart-to-heart spark of connection between husbands and wives. There'll be a Q&A session at the end where viewers can ask Greg and Erin questions. We hope you'll make the time to connect with us and also to build into your marriage. Log on to safamily.co.za for all the details. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Graham Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you back next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.